Welcome to another episode of the Record of Lodoss War OVA Rewatch Podcast. My name is Alan.
And my name is Kate. We run ReverseThieves.com. That's where you can find all of our other podcasts as well as blog posts every week.
And if you have any comments about the podcast or your memories of Lodoss War, you can contact us on Twitter. My name is HisuiRT.
I'm NarutakiRT, and we also have Reverse Thieves on Twitter.
And if you just want to send us an email or maybe an audio file that we can play, you can send it to ReverseThieves@gmail.com. Welcome to Lodoss Island. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss the plot of the episode.
This is episode 7, The War of Heroes. This episode is like kind of straightforward plot-wise. It is finally the time for the two armies of Fawn and Beld to meet and clash after the machinations of Carla to sort of kickstart the civil war. And, you know, at the beginning, we see King Kashu kind of taking on the forces, and finally our main heroes meet up with them, and then it becomes sort of a bigger battle of armies.
When Parn and Bond and the rest of the army save Kashu, it's actually to lure them into a bigger trap where Ashram and Beld basically pincer the hero's army, and all hell breaks loose.
And kind of in the meantime, Eto, Slain, and Gim aren't at the battle, and Eto decides that he needs to, like, ride off and go meet with them, while Slain and Gim decide that they're going to go off on their own, and they have this plan that we don't fully know about yet. Also, we see Carla being creepy in her castle and discussing with herself her evil plans. And then during the battle, Parn gets a vision from Wart about how to defeat Carla and how that's the most important thing and not this battle, so stop worrying about that.
But he gets that kind of vision just as Bond, like, wants to end this battle. So he basically calls out Beld, and they have, like, this one-on-one fight. And it goes on for, like, at least over an hour as they're battling back and forth. Enough for basically the sun to seriously start going down. And as the sunset is in the background, they make their final charge at each other after getting little nicks in on each other. And both men land serious wounds and they both fall. But only Beld gets up. And it seems like Beld has been victorious. He's defeated Fawn, and then he will marshal his troops and defeat everyone else. But then all of a sudden a spear flies out of the sky and stabs him. And then it's like, you know, a spear is good, but a spear plus a lightning attack is better.
And just as if that wasn't enough, a giant storm comes. Dragons appear from meteorites that go and awaken them all. And Ashram picks up Beld's sword. Very dramatic ending. Also, Parn realizes that war sucks. And that's the end of the episode.
He goes, "War? Hoo-ha! What is it good for? Absolutely nothing."
Leveling up. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss player and character growth.
I want to start this section by asking, did Woodchuck have off-screen character growth? Because I could have sworn in the previous episode, he was talking about how Deedlit and Parn were basically sheeple who are going off to get themselves killed for no good reason when they should just take the money and run. And then Woodchuck was at this battle. So I don't understand.
Maybe somebody paid him a lot.
I guess. I just thought it was really weird, unless I just completely misunderstood what was happening in the previous episode.
I thought he said, like, after this war, because hopefully either they win and he can then, you know, basically return to the underworld, or if they lose, he's gotta, like,
the underworld.
I mean, like the criminal underworld, not the spiritual underworld. He can return to a life of crime.
Oh, okay.
Or if Beld wins, then he's gotta get the hell off this continent and onto the main continent ASAP. but whichever way, he was not going to stick around for their, like, Carla silliness, which he also eventually gets drawn into. But I thought that's what he was saying.
Okay, I definitely misunderstood that.
Because I felt like he felt like he could maybe be helpful in this and then, you know, just return to a life of criminal debauchery. If he did say he was not even going to fight, then sure, right, Kate. He went through some magical on-screen character growth where he's like, yeah, I guess I'm here tonight. I'll play. Fine, I'll join the battle. I didn't think I was going to make it, so I wrote an excuse so my character would leave, but my plans are canceled. So yeah, I guess I'll help you guys out with the war.
That makes sense. The other, I guess, Parn has character growth in this episode because he realizes that battles kill people. I mean, that was supposed to be this sort of realization.
Well, I think maybe he had that heroic
ideal
of war-making men. You know, it's essentially what so many people had, especially pre-World War I and II, that war was this forge of heroes and that it was this manly, great thing that made people better. And now you're like, oh no, it just kills a bunch of people and maybe some people profit off it.
And he had that deep, deep connection with that man who was riding the horse next to him and told him that story about how his son gave him that amulet or whatever for good luck.
And then he finds him dead.
Subtle. Mm-hmm. Subtle, guys.
So what you're saying is Parn has now become the lost generation. Just the right beat poetry and maybe the sun also rises. I gotcha. I do feel it is interesting that, like, Edo's only at this point when, like, the major battle is, like, moments away. He's like, I've got to go to Parn now.
But he still doesn't even get there.
Yeah.
So I just don't know what that was about at all.
Would you think he would have had that revelation maybe so at a point where he could have gotten there to help out with that battle as opposed to when he gets there, he'll be like, hey guys, I guess I'll carry your bags after you've seen half of your friends die before you.
I mean, you definitely get the feeling as the story goes on that they really only care about very, very specific people and characters in the story. And they're like, I guess we put these other people in, but we really either don't care or don't have the budget to make this work, so we'll just devise reasons for them not to be here.
I mean, we'll get more into the, you know, differences between the book section, but certain people being in certain places seems more illogical because of that.
Definitely agree with that. I feel like, I don't know, nobody else, I mean, everybody's kind of in peril in here, so I don't feel like we have a lot of other growth.
We do.
Oh, okay. Who am I forgetting? Do.
But you have to flip the story if you see it as there being a bad guy party, then Ashram has some major character development because he's seen his great leader slain, and now he has people to get vengeance on. Both the army that was instrumental in getting his boss killed, and Carla, who he definitely knows is behind striking down Belt in his moment of triumph. And he also has Belt's sword, so, you know, he's gotten a power up. That's definitely a sword that gives you both some stat growth and some character growth, because that it's highly implied that that sword also kind of influences its user. So I think if anybody has grown the most, it's Ashram in this episode.
He's definitely had a lot of story development, that's for sure. And I realized that, you know, because Carla is not the only villain, the major villain of this, of the, like, the next part hasn't actually been revealed to anyone else except the audience at this point, because we only see Wagner right at the very end, and he's just like, I'm on my horse and I am thinking evil things. And yeah, Ashram is like has kind of now become the villain that everybody is really interested in, and is like, this villain has layers and there's something going on there.
And I feel like Parn, now that I think about it, did have at least a little bit of a connection to Fawn, especially through Fawn's connection to Parn's father. So I feel like his death will probably have at least a little bit of ramifications on him and Cashew.
Oh, definitely.
But that's future character growth and changes.
It behooves me to mention that we once again have a Cashew mention and then everybody gets shiny eyes. The vapors!
It's like, Cash is in trouble. I gotta go save him. And Fawn's like, maybe you should have rushed to the field.
Shiny eyes, like, you don't understand my feelings.
Sword World Supplements. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss fantasy and RPG tropes and elements.
So we have the classic big battle of good and evil on a rocky plain. Tolkien used it a lot. He uses it at the end of The Hobbit. He uses it at the end of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. The Wheel of Time uses it. It's a pretty common way to cap, if not a whole story, at least one leg of a story. And if you consider this kind of the first half of this OVA, we once again see having, you know, huge armies who have been kind of having skirmishes have their divisive battle to decide who wins between good and evil.
And in addition to that, they're both depicted as one being wearing like all dark colors and a lot of like black armor, and then the other side is all like silver and white and shining. So you don't get, and that's like just very unsubtle, like very clear delineation of good, of what they consider good and evil.
Also, Kate, we have to mention, even though you mentioned the last section, the, hey, we meet a guy and he has a connection to a kid and we become friends. And man, that is every death signal, especially when you have an item that easily makes you identifiable when we find you dead, because we're going to find you dead to show you the price of war.
Yeah, and of course, it's only a character that's just been introduced in that episode or in that scene or whatever. So we don't actually care about them. So they don't go the step further by developing a character or actually killing a character that matters, that anyone has a connection to actually drive this point home. Because it's like they don't have enough guts to do that.
But random soldier A, they'll murder his ass, no problem.
I do have to say, though, I did not remember that it was like, my son gave this to me. I definitely thought it was, I'm going to get married after this, or whatever. Because I think that's the almost the more famous thing. Either I'm retiring or I'm getting married.
I thought it was his daughter. I might have said this on the podcast. I thought his daughter gave him a doll and he had it around his neck or something. I remember his son gave him a locket, but I guess quibbling over commons at that point.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is a trope, but I thought it was pretty shoehorned in that Wart just shows up in a vision to Parn and is like, here's the thing about Carla. Here, she's really important. And also, here's how you defeat her. Like, here's all the information that you need. I don't know what I want to call that. Maybe just bad? But, like, that was just a thing that happened. And I just thought that was very strange.
It was just like, who's going to get this shit back on course? Ah, man. Vision from Wart. It is one step down from Deus Ex Machina. Only because Wart is godlike, but not a god.
Yeah, I just thought it was weird. So I don't think that this is a trope.
And, Kate, the other cliche trope that was just thrown in there to make that scene more cheesy is mentioning he might be the chosen one.
Oh, right! Oh, right! I wrote that down and everything! I totally forgot. I guess.
What's a weird place to mention that as an aside.
That boy may be the one.
I guess he's remembering back. Yeah, because he's remembering back to his conversation with Carla at that point. But yeah, it just seems like such a weird, like, oh, by the way, let me take a moment to just think to myself. even though we mentioned in the last section, like taking the sword of your fallen master and then using it to get revenge is quite a common.
Well, we don't know if he's gotten revenge yet, Al.
Well, use it to try to get revenge.
Oh, to try to get revenge.
That, I think, is pretty common. Usually it's the good guys doing that, but bad guys can do that one as well.
I also don't know if this is, like, a thing I see a lot, but it felt like something I see a lot, where it's like, you know, Parn and Ashram confront each other, and they're about to get in a fight, and then their women's get in the way, and they're like, no, this can't happen right now.
And then another fight gets in their way, so they're like, well, we'll finish this some other day.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, technically, they didn't get in the way so much as save both of their asses, but whatever. They were both like, women's getting in the way of our manly fight. Like, no, you're two idiots. But I feel like that is, like, very common.
Actually, all these, like, now that I think about it, all the getting the characters back together things are pretty ham-fisted in this one. Because, like you said, Woodchuck just instantly changes.
Or, well, maybe I just, like we talked about, maybe I just didn't understand what was actually going on.
Eto basically just has a mystical connection to either Parn or Deetlin, like, they're in trouble.
I mean, I guess you could say it's his priest powers or whatever.
I think it's the Shining King. It's okay, the Shining. Okay. And then he just runs off. So I feel like they just like, I don't know. People just get visions. Let's just move on. We need to move on.
The Dungeon Master's Guide. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss comparisons between the book and the anime.
So, since this episode is, for the most part, just a big battle and then a kind of a few little moments outside of it, it's pretty easy to sort of see the comparison in the book. And it's the battle itself is pretty different. I mean, I think ultimately, like, the way it sort of ends up is very similar, but just, I think in terms of scope, it feels a lot smaller, even though I think it's supposed to feel big in the anime, but I think the budget, like, sort of limits their ability to do that, so it doesn't feel as big as it should.
I just stand here, slack-jawed, not moving, with my mouth open, shocked that you said that, Kate.
And there's, like, one line of horses, you know, and it's supposed to be this massive clash of armies. And so in the book, everybody is at this battle except Gem. So Eto, Slain, they're there, they're fighting, they're doing things.
There's a bigger magical component. Like, Slain and Deetlin have a lot to do because the enemy has a lot of, like, dark elves as spellcasters. So Slain and Deetlin and, like, the whole mage corps has to counter them. And I feel like the basically the human army, or at least the, you know, the main Lotus Island army, has their shit together a little better. There's a lot more, like, back and forth thrust, counterattack, parry, reprisal kind of things going on. And the main party just kind of has, like, a tip of the arrowhead through it. Also because, you know, Parn just likes to rush, and so kind of he's rushing towards the heart of the battle, and everybody kind of has to, like, protect him as they go through all of this nonsense.
As per usual. In the book, we get the big confrontation between Fawn and Beld, and they have their duel, but while the end of that duel is sort of similar in the book, as soon as Fawn goes down, King Kosh is like, me now! Me next!
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's actually the one who's there when Carla interferes.
I also just got the feeling that, if I remember correctly, they participate in the war so that there'll be, hopefully, a little more peace in the land so they can go back to hunting Carla. They don't need Wart to, like, telepathy in and remind them of that stuff.
I mean, that definitely doesn't happen because he sort of, like, talks to them more about it when he actually has, like, when they have gone and visited him in the book. And he gives Slain a staff. So there's nothing, there's, like, not anything really in the book about Parn being the chosen one or whatever, because I think Wart thinks of them more as a party, which makes sense because it's based, you know, like, presumably the DM would not be like, only person important here is that guy. So it's more somewhat, like, evenly distributed about, like, okay, well, you'll probably play this role, and then, like, we're going to give Slain this special staff that will, like, sort of help you guys when you confront Carla at some point, so.
And they have, like, a decent stratagem. If she's still being sheltered by the Marmo army, it can't work, so they have to defeat the Marmo army so she's armyless and then enact the plan that they're presumably going to do in the next episode. But, yeah, right now, they're they're just like, man, it would be so cool if we had a plan to get Karloff. Shrugs.
I also feel like in the book, it's clear to the reader that Carla interferes in the fight, but not to really to anybody else, because she doesn't put on this grandiose display to scream, I am Carla and I have done things. She just sort of aids Kashu in killing Beld. So, and Ostrom's really pissed about it. And that's like the first time he introduces himself. So I double checked that in the book. And this is like the first, that's the first moment where Ostrom's like, I am this person.
Yeah, like I think he maybe is mentioned one or two times. Oh, no, he's not even mentioned.
No, because also there's like other random characters from the army, I guess, appear. But like,
I must have been confusing them because I do remember him appearing at the end of that battle. So I just assumed, I must have assumed one of those random other generals was him.
I feel like it's just so vague that you can't know it. And then like, yeah, at finally here, he's like, I'm a dude and I care a lot that you killed my master.
I foolishly assumed that they would bring up that guy just at least like by name before that point, so that you'd at least vaguely remember him when he has that scene. But I guess I was wrong. They just have him, hey, remember me? I was here the whole time, just in the background.
I was definitely important. A couple of random, I thought, interesting little tiny things that were different. So in the book, Beld's armor is bright red. And in the, obviously we were talking about earlier in the anime, like everything about the Mar army is like black and shiny black. So much more colorful. I realized that, I think it was in the last episode and we talked about it where Parn comes back and then Fawn's like, I want to reward you. Here is like holy knight armor. Isn't it cool? Don't you want it? And Parn's like, I thank you so much, blah, 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 but I want to wear my father's armor. And he's like, cool. In the book, he's like, hell yeah, holy knight armor, fuck this whole armor. Like, so there's no sentimental attachment to that armor in the book. He's like, yes, I'm a holy knight. I did it. Cool. I'm in. Awesome.
All I could think, though, is I wonder how much it's Parn has a greater attachment and how much the animators didn't want to have him have a new character design with new armor.
I think it's attachment because clearly in the book / in the game, it was just like, oh, I get better stats if I wear that armor? Well, then I don't care that this armor is, like, relevant to my backstory. I want the new armor. Which is, like, what happens all the time when you're playing an RPG. You're like, this is really important, but you just gave me a new
plus
shiny
thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that, to me, it's almost the opposite. It's like, the anime team was like, I feel like story-wise and, like, backstory, like, this really, like, makes sense. And that was all thrown away in the actual game. But that's my
father's legacy sword. But this sword is Vorpal, you say?
We can just keep this legacy sword in our giant bag of holding, okay? It'll be there in case we need it.
Plus six against undead, you say?
Revelations from Cardis. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss our favorite parts and final thoughts.
So, war hasn't gotten small. It's just the animation budgets that have.
There were some moments.
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, whenever people look back on Lotus, they're like, man, there are a lot of good still shots or like small scenes. And then there's a lot of like, one slash of sword, then cut to characters looking at battle and here, ching, 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 cut back, one slash of sword.
And here's some mediocre mid-range shots.
I think the part I alluded to before that just had everybody in the room cracking up is when Ashram and Parn are fighting and then Deedlet and Puritas get involved. And there's just that one scene where Puritas is just frozen and has her mouth open in just stunned shock. And then it flips to Deedlet being basically the same way. And we're like, oh my God, they just did that.
They were just still shots. And they didn't even bother to give them voice. You know, they could have at least had them be like, stop, or ah, or something. And they didn't even bother to do that.
Yeah, it is just this open mouth shock. And it's, I feel like when I was a kid, I didn't notice that. But as an adult, I was just like hand in palm being like, oh, wow, that is just... I'm like, boy, there better be some better fight choreography later on to make up for this scene.
Yeah, I mean, the real, like, intense moments between Belle and Fawn is when they're sort of grappling right next to each other and talking, because, like, that's where all the intensity is. It's not in the actual fight.
Yeah, because in those scenes, I feel like Fawn and Belle get a lot of very detailed shots. Like, you see, like, every wrinkle on Fawn's face, and, like, Belle's armor is really up to the nines in those scenes. But they're all basically static, talk, 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 conversation, battle of strength with swords.
Yeah, I think we get to see how great the character designs are, mm-hmm. but rewatching it now, yeah, I definitely see how much the animation is cut from that, so, which is very unfortunate, you know? It still has, I think, a lot of intensity, but there's, like we said, there's kind of some, like, really laughable sections. I did really like Belle and Fawn's confrontation, and I enjoyed, you know, when Belle's sort of saying that, like, we've known each other for so long, and, like, we're so old now. And Fawn says, well, I'll live long enough to see you dead. And I was like, ooh, that's like a good, you know, line. And then I was actually wondering, have they mentioned in the anime that the sword keeps Belle young? Because in the book,
yeah,
the sword, that's, like, kind of the way he beat Fawn, is that the sword has kept him much younger, and Fawn is older, and he gets, you know, he just doesn't have, like, the stamina of his life. But I feel, when I kind of thought that that's what had happened, but then when they sort of confront each other, they seem to be equally old, so...
Yeah, no, I think if anything, he's supposed to pick it up that maybe Belle has, you know, maybe cheated a few years just by character design. But yeah, no. Yeah, maybe, like, you pick up by the name, it's Life Drinker, so maybe he gets a little extra energy from the people he kills. But that's all, like, if it was just the anime, that strikes me as more like fan wank theory than anything else from given what they tell you in the anime.
Oh, I totally forgot about the princess. I don't know if that's just because we haven't watched an episode in a while, and so I wasn't totally, you know, just kind of in the schedule of watching, but they just show her looking off into the distance, presumably because there's, like, an army far in the distance battling. And I was like, who the hell is this woman?
So, since we haven't seen her in a while, and their character designs are kind of similar, I was like, why are we seeing, like, Priestess's daughter?
Lelia. Yeah. That's Carla. No. What? Yeah, no. Totally.
I'm like, why are we flashing? Oh, right. It's the princess.
I was glad that we got to see a lot of dragons in this episode, because it starts with wyverns or whatever they are. I know we already had a conversation about this, mm-hmm. so I'm not doing it again. But whatever those ones are that they fly into the army... It starts with that, and then we end with all the dragons awakening around Lodos, which I didn't remember happening. I was like, they're around. I mean, totally didn't remember weird meteor.
Yeah, because I think they have to fight one or two of them in the upcoming stuff. So what you're saying is Carla unlocked all the weapon battles in Final Fantasy VII. So all these dragons have become optional bosses that they can fight for big rewards.
That is 100% what I meant. Good job interpreting, Al.
No problem. That's what I'm here for. It's weird that they have a focus on Parn and Deedlit, and so they have her do a little more here, but it's odd because she's still... Even though she has stuff to do and she gets a little more time to shine than pretty much anybody else other than Parn of the main party members in this episode, at the same time, I feel like she still does so much less than she does in the book, because she's so instrumental in getting them to the center. It's basically her and Slane that really and actually a little bit Eto that get them to where they need to be. And then, you know, they can participate and see that big fun belt battle. So it's like they clearly have an emphasis on her, but like you said, not too much of an emphasis, because you might forget that Parn is the main dude who everything is about.
And I feel as though, and I can't remember if this continues from here, but we really haven't seen her use magic since the first time she used magic. And so in the book, she uses her magic way more than she ever used a sword. And I'm not opposed to her using a sword. Like, cool. I like it. But it's just interesting that there's so little magic that from anyone else who isn't Carla.
And that, you know, now that you mentioned that, that's a really good point. Because it also kind of makes certain elements later on in the series, especially why she gets kidnapped, make a little less sense. Whereas if she was slinging around ancient elf magic all the time, when she gets kidnapped because she's such a powerful magical vessel, it would mean more because you've seen it in action all the time. You're like, oh man, she's casting spells on par with Slain, who's the sorceress trained all her life.
I mean, maybe, again, this is like what I said is that I can't remember because like maybe she does use some magic past this point and that's mm-hmm. what gains the attention or whatever. But I just think it's interesting that really nobody has really been using much magic in the last few episodes.
Yeah, no, it is a bit of an oddity. I think maybe they were just obsessed with sword fighting.
So my final thought is, I keep thinking that at the end of the part one story, it's the last two episodes, I'm like, okay, so this is the last episode. No, okay, oh, it's this one. No, next episode, ladies and gentlemen, and myself, the next episode is the end of the part one story. So we will see the confrontation with Carla.